UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, the regular host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK charity that supports the adoption of integrative medicine in cancer care in the UK. The subject of today's show is an extremely important one for all of us, but particularly those with cancer. Toxins in our food and other consumer products. Many valiant organisations have been battling to slow the contamination and degradation of our food by industry, and today I'm talking to representatives of two of those, the Organic Consumers Association and the Clean Label Project, who have teamed up to produce a report on the previously undocumented contamination of health food products with heavy metals. I'm speaking over the internet to Catherine Poole, Associate Director of the Organic Consumers Association. She's on the east coast of the US. And to Jackie Bowen for the Clean Label Project, who is further west in the US. Welcome to the Yes to Life Show, Jackie and Catherine.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So, Jackie, it's seriously early for you. Thanks for making the effort to make this time zone thing work.
I appreciate the opportunity.
It's great to be able to talk to you both together about this extremely important topic of toxins in our food. It's something that preoccupies more and more people with cancer, and quite rightly so, and should really preoccupy more people before they get cancer if we're to make any impression on the exponential rise in cases. So I don't feel that the Yes to Life show has really given it as much attention as it merits, so I'm really delighted to be talking to you both today to start to put that right. So you're from two separate organisations. Catherine, you're from the Organic Consumers Organisation. I've been aware of that organisation for a long time, putting up a strong resistance to the march of agribusiness. Jackie, you're from the Clean Label Project, an organisation I'm not familiar with yet, but one that looks to be doing some fantastic work. So I wondered if you start off by just introducing your own organisation, the story behind it, and then yourself and what led you to be doing this work.
Sure, I can go first. This is Catherine with Organic Consumers Association. So our organization has been around for about 20, 22 years, and we were originally founded around issues having to do with the formation of the organic standards rules in the U.S. And at the time, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, when they were writing those rules, wanted to include things like GMOs and sewage sludge and irradiation. And so we built a movement to oppose that and have been on that track ever since. Focusing quite a lot on issues around product quality and accurate labeling of products.
And how did you become involved?
Well, myself personally, prior to working with Organic Consumers Association, I worked for another nonprofit, but it was in the progressive media world, where we covered a wide range of issues of interest to progressives that didn't always get a lot of coverage by mainstream media. And I became familiar with the work of Organic Consumers Association and then just sort of gravitated toward those issues and then became involved with the organization.
Okay, and how long have you been involved now?
I've been with the Organic Consumers Association now for about 7.5 years.
Right. Okay. Great. And Jackie, do you want to introduce the Clean Label Project?
Yes. Clean Label Project. We're a national nonprofit and a consumer advocacy organization focused on bringing truth and transparency to consumer product labeling. Let's be honest, you know, food and consumer product marketing departments can do a really effective job at selling comfort and security on product packaging. So for us at Clean Label Project, in data and science we trust. What we believe is that by using analytical chemistry and revealing the true contents of best-selling products, what we're able to do is we're able to shift the definition of food and consumer product safety. So much as food safety regulatory fabric in America is focused on E. coli, Salmonella, Listeria, pathogen, and microbiological contamination. But not enough conversations are taking place about the real public and environmental health threat associated with heavy metal, pesticide, and plasticizer exposure.
Mm-hmm. And how did you become involved in this work?
So by training, I'm a food safety and quality systems engineer. So I've actually been working within the organic, non-GMO, gluten-free space for nearly 20 years now. Mm. And so when the opportunity presented itself to become more involved with Clean Label Project, which at the time was just a little fledgling NGO about 5 years ago, it seemed like a great opportunity. There's been kind of a shifting tide over the past several years. You see this proliferation of on-package label claims, but at the same time, you see an increase in consumer, media, regulatory, and academic attention being paid to industrial environmental contaminants and toxins and chemicals concern. So it was a matter of jumping from looking just at the certifications into actually looking at what is it that consumers are concerning themselves with. There's a growing divide between the court of law and the court of public opinion of what the definition of safety means. Mm. And so for Clean Label Project to get more involved on the consumer side is what was really interesting to me.
Yeah, sounds great. All right, well, look, up to now, over here in the UK, we've sheltered behind some robust European regulation that's successfully fended off some undesirable US products. Stepping out into a post-Brexit world, we now have more reason to be a lot more concerned about the arrival of less regulated American products here in the UK. So the success of organisations like yours in turning the tide on toxins in food suddenly becomes a greater cause for interest here. In terms of the movement towards natural, healthy, uncontaminated food, how would you say things stand at present in the US?
Well, I'm not sure how to respond to that. You know, from the consumer perspective, I think there is increased interest in, concern about, as Jackie said, what's in our food, what's the relationship between our food and our health and the health of our environment, the water we drink, et cetera. But unfortunately, under our current regulatory environment, it is pretty much an uphill battle right now. We don't have, I would say, strong support from the agencies here in the U.S., the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration. Their regulatory efforts are not mirroring consumer trends and consumer concerns. Mm. So there is a lot of conflict, I think, and that opens the door for organizations like ours to continue to educate, to do the work that Jackie's organization does with the testing, and to really continue to draw attention to that relationship between contaminants in our food and our own health, and hope that through consumer education, we can influence consumer buying decisions so that even if we don't get the support we need right now at the regulatory level, we can influence the marketplace and force corporations to clean up their products to meet consumer demand.
Mm, right. So it's a grassroots thing.
I'll just add to that it's interesting that because of societal choices around mining, fracking, industrial agriculture, coal burning, these different types of contaminants, they end up in the air, they end up in the water, and they end up in the soil. And unless brands shift their true north to align with the consumer expectation of safety, different ingredients that have been contaminated with elevated levels of these different types of industrial environmental contaminants will ultimately end up in the finished product. But the good news is that what you see is that there's an increase in consumer literacy and understanding around label claims. Consumers are increasingly concerned about what they put on their bodies, what they provide for their families. They're reading labels, they're doing research. And so it's an exciting time to be a consumer right now, just in this age of transparency. Using social media, you're able to demand answers from brands. And that kind of brings much more power to consumers.
Right. Well, good. Yeah, and great for your organizations to be driving that along. I find it's interesting. On the one hand, the takeover of food production by business in the US seems far more devastating than here, most notably in regard to GMOs. But my own experience of visiting California recently is that the reaction to that is also greater, as actually the availability of organic produce in California was way greater than in Surrey, where I live, where it's actually quite hard to find. So I'm guessing California, though, might be a bit of an organic bubble.
That may be true to some extent. I don't know. I mean, I think overall, if you look at the sales trends in demand for organic produce, especially, and also pasture-raised meat products, we're seeing consistent growing demand. Now, it's still a very small percentage of the marketplace, but interestingly, one of the silver linings to this COVID-19 pandemic has been a real burst in demand and a real support of local producers of organic and pasture-raised produce and meat products. So we are really seeing quite a jump right now, quite a surge in demand, as the pandemic reveals a lot of the flaws in our industrial food supply here.
Well, that's that is a silver lining. It's great to hear. So I want to move on to what has led me to talk to you both today, the fact you've teamed up to create a report. Now, it's a pretty shocking one that concerns the ingredients of supplements actually touted as health products. Maybe you could start off by sort of giving us the headlines. In broad terms, what did you investigate and what did you find?
So what Organic Consumers Association Clean Label Project we're looking to do is bring attention to the growing public and environmental health threat that's associated with CAFOs farming, confined animal farming operations. Confined animal farming operations are obviously high density farming operations where the animals may be treated with antibiotics as well as growth hormones, as well as, be in high density areas and therefore be surrounded, not be able to move. It's about the animal welfare, but it's not just the animal welfare. It's also about where exactly do these products come from? In a product category that largely touts itself as being a natural health product, do those expectations behind food safety and those expectations behind animal welfare, do they align themselves with the consumer expectation of a natural product? So what actually Clean Label Project got involved based on the invitation for Organic Consumers Association to kind of look at the collagen category. The collagen category is in high growth industry within the whole protein powder sector. You have so many consumers that are reaching for collagen and protein powder to supplement their already healthy lifestyle. So we wanted to actually see what's in America's best-selling collagen products. The way that Organic Consumers Association ended up pulling the samples for testing was based on the Amazon.com bestsellers list, as well as the Clean Label Project 2018 protein powder study. And what was evaluated is looking at the heavy metal content. Obviously, we're limited based on what's disclosed in product packaging, so we have no way to necessarily know, are these products the byproduct of CAFOs farming? So what we did is we evaluated the products based on heavy metal testing. One thing that's so important to note is that both Organic Consumers Association, I'm sure I can speak for you on this one, Catherine, as well as Clean Label Project, sees the role of collagen as critical within the sustainability story. In other words, if there is going to be an animal that is created and ultimately used in the food supply, utilizing all value-added components is absolutely essential. But the major takeaway here is that the reality is that the numbers of of conventional livestock versus organic livestock. Organic is just so much lower. So the supply of organic collagen is also so much lower. And we see this taking place in the marketplace. So what we're looking to do is really inspire that consumer expectation and that consumer demand for all of the qualities and characteristics that go along with organic farming and raising organic livestock, which includes animal welfare.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe you can just tell us the main findings.
Sure. And so when we evaluated the products for testing, both Organic and Consumers Association Clean Label Project worked with a few different laboratories in order to complete that testing. The main takeaways is that you see a significant quality gradient when it comes to the heavy metal content. So what we looked at was we were evaluating total arsenic, cadmium, lead, and mercury, and we tested the products and reported the results based on per serving. So the thing is, where this becomes important is that you have, it's great that consumers are buying collagen, but it's one where if consumers are buying collagen based on health reasons, it's one where, the test results reveal a different story, that there's some products that consistently had very low levels, in some cases, no detectable heavy metals on a per serving basis. And on the other side, you have a handful of products that had exceeded different state regulations here in the U.S.
Wow.
And so what you see is a different quality gradient between some top and bottom performing products, at least when it relates to the heavy metal content.
Mm.
And building on that, what Jackie articulated about the fact that consumers, you don't go out and buy a collagen product for pretty much any other reason than health and fitness, right?
Mm, right.
And so if you're dedicated to that and you're consuming this on a daily basis, not just here and there like you would some other food, there's the issue of the accumulation. We know that heavy metals accumulate in the body's tissues. That's one of the big problems with them. And so if you're taking a collagen supplement every day, you may think, oh, well, it's just a little bit of heavy metals, but you have a problem with accumulation of those heavy metals.
Yeah. You're stockpiling them. Absolutely. Was there any way of broadly categorizing the products, in relation to this gradient? I mean, were the cheap ones the worst ones or anything like that?
Catherine, what do you think? I don't feel like I saw anything like that.
No, I don't think we noticed that trend either. That's an interesting question that you raise, and maybe something we should go back and look into a little more carefully. But off the top of my head, that's not a trend that stood out.
Mm-hmm. So it looks a little bit like sort of greenwashing this, where something's touted as being very healthy, but actually when you look into it, it's not really. How much of it do you think is kind of deliberate misleading of the public, and how much is it just plain sloppiness by the manufacturers?
I'll take that one, Catherine. I guess from my perspective, I look at it this way. At the end of the day, Clean Label Project views compliance with federal regulations as table stakes. That's the minimum expectation. But for brands that voluntarily choose to make marketing claims, to create, to have packaging showing, animals running and bounding through, fields and things like that, and for brands that tout themselves to be a natural product, there's a different level of expectation from consumers when it comes to the true content of that product.
Right.
It's not just about the product packaging. It's also about what's inside. And so it's a matter of making sure that if brands are going to create a kind of a perception of that it's better for you, it's a matter of making sure that they deliver on that promise and expectation for consumers.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, one of the ways obviously the consumer relies on for maybe judging that kind of thing are the standards that have been set up. I mean, the organic standard is a complete godsend to people in terms of having a pretty good idea of what they're buying, which would be so hard without it. I just wonder whether you think the standards we have are still working for us, or has a sort of scope creep eroded them over time?
Well, clearly there are issues within the organic standards at the regulatory level, right up to the National Organic Standards Board, and that's across all product segments right now. Mm. And so I do believe that despite the influence of large corporations that have bought up a lot of the organic brands here and are now influencing organic standards, not necessarily in a good way, I think despite that, as Jackie's pointed out, consumers are becoming more and more literate, more and more aware, and therefore more and more demanding. So the hope is that we can sort of counter that, those negative influences over organic standards, by continuing to educate consumers through reports such as this one. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go back to one thing that Jackie pointed out quite accurately, that when it comes to sourcing collagen, there, because you know so much of the meat in this country is produced industrially, it's difficult to source from organic and grass-fed raised animals. But there's an additional layer of complication there, in that often when after an animal has been processed, and then you get to the renderings part of things, which is where the collagen comes from, there's commingling of the organic, grass-fed, and industrial. So to be a little bit fair to this industry, it is very difficult to source the collagen from the grass-fed and organic if those are not kept separate at the processing level. And we hope to, in addition to educate consumers, perhaps educate the industry and push them in the direction of themselves demanding this differentiation at the processing level.
Mm. Well, that's the way it happens, isn't it? It's that kind of thing, like, you know, I can remember 30 or 40 years ago, the sort of standards for timber, say, and how it's sourced, gradually creeping from the West right back to the sources where they're actually being chopped out of the jungle, you know. So eventually they're able to say, yes, actually you're getting one that's been farmed properly. You know, it's a slow process, but the pressure has to come from the consumer end, really.
Exactly. If we can educate the consumers and raise demand for this level of transparency and separation in the supply chain, then we hope that that will then force the industry to push in that direction as well.
Hmm. Just sniffing back to what you were saying about corporations buying up health companies, it's a kind of double-edged sword, isn't it? On the one hand, we like to see corporations doing some good stuff and not just doing whatever makes the most money. But inevitably, there comes along this pressure for the high standards that maybe the company they bought, that they originally started out with, to start to erode those and to think in the way that corporations do, towards profit rather than the motive of making the finest foods.
That is exactly, you framed that exactly correctly. It is an issue, very much so here in the U.S. We've seen huge consolidation in the organic and natural health industries. And, you know, that's a double-edged sword. It's because these corporations see the consumer demand, and so they want to get in on that game, so to speak. But that comes with a lot of lobbying power from those corporations, and they have, unfortunately, more influence than they should over organic standards.
Yeah, it's a problem. It's certainly one that's going to only grow in terms of as we move forward. And if the sector of organic food grows, then of course the corporations are going to want to be in on it. They won't want to miss out on the act if there's money to be made there. So I think we're going to have to find ways to respond to that as time goes on more and more.
Definitely.
Okay, so while we're talking about standards, Jackie, I think Clean Label, are you seeking to introduce new ones, am I right?
Yes, so Clean Label Project, we have a variety of different standards that we've created with the idea of trying to create a catalyst for market change and reform. So the way Clean Label Project standards work is we actually use benchmarked testing. So in other words, the way we look at it is in the absence of federal regulation setting clear guidelines over heavy metals, pesticide residues, plasticizers, what we use benchmark data. The thing is, it's like when you're talking about something like, for example, lead exposure, you know, there's different federal maximum levels of lead in food products, food and consumer products. But at the same time, there's a difference between regulatory limits and public health limits. From a public health limit perspective, the World Health Organization, the Center of Disease Control, the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Medical Association, the FDA, the EPA, all say there's no safe level of lead.
Right.
And so from a public health perspective, if you use zero as your ultimate goal, then what you can do is you can kind of shift standards into saying, okay, if we take an overall data set and you benchmark, then you're able to look at it as, okay, because of societal choices around mining, fracking, industrial agriculture, we know we want zero, but we know that this stuff exists in the environment. So with that, how can we shift ingredient supply chains so that in addition to caring about taste, in addition to caring about price, in addition to caring about microbiological and industrial contaminants, what we're able to do is set maximum tolerance levels over levels of heavy metals, pesticide residues, and plasticizers. Once we can get brands to voluntarily start incorporating those into their ingredient sourcing policies, then we're starting to shift what ends up in that finished product, what ends up on dinner plates every evening. Because what we're doing is looking to inspire consumers to think about food safety differently. Right. Not just a matter of looking at E. coli, salmonella, listeria. It's a matter of looking at our brands voluntarily choosing to think about food safety differently and therefore sourcing ingredients, thinking about these other types of contaminants that consumers are concerned about. Hmm. And that's the foundation of Clean Label Project Standard.
Right. And you're approaching businesses with this suggestion, and how are they receiving it?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's actually the industry that is most receptive, and it makes sense. The industry that's most receptive, it would be infant formulas and baby foods. Anything that's
right.
focused on kind of infants, children, and pregnant moms.
Right.
Think about it. The first 1,000 days of life are critically important to the long-term health and wellness.
Mm-hmm.
The World Health Organization says that the first 1,000 days is when optimal brain and immune system development take place. So with that, it's one where obviously avoiding heavy metals, pesticide residues, and plasticizers is important for everyone, but especially for America's most vulnerable population.
Mm. All right. Well, that's a good place to start, without a doubt. And yeah, it hasn't always been the case, has it? We know that some of the largest corporations have produced their delightfully pink products for babies that have actually been labeled with carcinogens. So that's definitely a move in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Talking about the metals, just, you know, in case there's any doubt in amongst anybody listening, could you just go through the reasons we should be concerned about the presence of these metals in food products?
Sure. So when it comes to heavy metals, there's been many studies linking heavy metals to cancers and carcinogens. You see links between pesticides and same-thing cancers as well as reproductive harm. So it's interesting because for me, it's one where, you know, from from a regulatory perspective, so much of the food safety regulatory fabric is focused on E. coli, salmonella, listeria, things that can cause acute, you know, illness in a very short period of time, from vomiting to diarrhea, and in some cases worse. But what's interesting is that when it comes to exposures like pesticide residues as well as heavy metals, these are things that won't manifest themselves in an illness for some cases 10, 15, 20, 24 years from now. So this is something that these low-level exposures are able to contribute to chronic disease that you may not know about for a long period, until a long period of time from now. So for us, it's a matter of making sure to minimize that exposure where possible.
Mm. So, I mean, that is a problem with industry, isn't it? Actually, with these kind of where your health is being affected sort of minimally but over a long period of time, pointing the finger and actually blaming an industry for it is pretty damned hard. And so, of course, they can get away with murder in a way quite often. It may catch up with them in the end, but it might take decades.
No, that's exactly right. You know, I was just going to say traceability is so important. And if you don't know what's in your food, what kind of contaminants you're being exposed to over that period of time that Jackie talked about, 10, 15 years, then it's impossible to trace that chronic illness or cancer or whatever you develop later on back to the foods you ate. And so that's just another reason for people to understand and know early on what's in their food and what they're consuming.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. So I presume it's the case that the majority of the public believe that the regulatory agencies are working a way to keep us safe. They've got things under control. They've got all the science to understand what the safe levels are of toxins. They're doing a great job protecting consumers from corporate greed and profiteering. So are they right to have this sort of confidence that these agencies, which are usually some arm of government, are actually looking after their well-being?
Again, I think consumers are becoming increasingly skeptical that's what's happening at the regulatory level. And I think a large part of that has to do with education around pesticides, and in this country, particularly Monsanto's Roundup and glyphosate. You know, the government has set levels saying, oh, well, it's safe, you know, it's safe to consume this much glyphosate in your Cheerios or whatever, because they set these standards. And actually, we've seen the regulatory agencies increase those minimum so-called safe levels under industry pressure when the industry says, you know, we've got to use more of this pesticide, so we have to tell consumers now that it's safe at an even higher level.
Yes, the thing that's exciting about consumers is that, you know, the good work of organizations like Organic Consumers, as well as Clean Label Project, is that by using consumer education, you're able to pull through industry reform. And given the current regulatory climate that we're in, frankly, regulatory can play catch up. It's always interesting for me to think that, you know, it wasn't until the late 80s that cigarette smoking was actually banned on airplanes. Mm. In the 1950s, cigarette smoking was encouraged for pregnant women because it reduced weight gain and it reduced anxiety. But then you start seeing these different reports that are coming out from academia linking cigarette smoking to different things like low birth weight. You start seeing the links between, wait a second, there's a correlation between leaded gasoline and reduced IQ in children. And so a matter of over time, public policy was established. But right now, we can see that there are, you know, different reports that have linked pesticides to endocrine disruption, that have linked different types of heavy metals to cancer. It doesn't have to make its way into formal food safety regulatory policy for us from a societal and from a food industry perspective to voluntarily change.
Right.
The unfortunate reality is that we've made a choice, and we have to sleep in the bed that we've made because of our societal choices around mining, fracking, industrial agriculture, coal burning. Because of that, these types of contaminants are in the air, the water, and the soil. But through proactive and diligent ingredient sourcing policies and procedures, brands can think of the way they source ingredients differently in order to minimize that consumer exposure, at least the dietary exposure, to these different types of heavy metals.
Well, we love to see corporations, food businesses, any kind of consumer products that actually putting their necks on the block and saying that they don't include some of the common carcinogens and things, and that's actually something to attract the public to buy their wares. That's the right direction for sure. And then they have to be made to live up to their claims, of course. Curiously, I was standing in patiently in the socially distanced queue in my local store the other day, right opposite the shelf where the Roundup was. And I was amused to see that it said no glyphosate on it. And, well, first of all, I mean, the reason that exists is because glyphosate has got such a bad name. And the fact that a manufacturer doesn't put something positive on their message, but says that their last and greatest ingredient is not in this product, is quite a testament to a turnaround in its fortune. So, you know, they're claiming this naturally breaks down in soil. It all looks lovely, but I don't begin to believe it, of course, until somebody gives me the science. But nonetheless, it is quite a change in the way that they're having to portray themselves, and it must be a result of consumer pressure.
That's exactly right. Consumers can ultimately, with their... it's really a matter of consumers viewing their dollars as a vote for all of the food systems that they believe in or the food systems that they don't. And over time, consumer expectation can pull through industry change. At the end of the day, the way we look at it at Clean Label Projects is that, you know, there's a growing consumer concern and demand, therefore, around products that are thinking of food safety differently, not, you know, making sure to minimize that exposure to heavy metals, pesticide residues, plasticizers, and other chemicals of concern. There will be progressive innovators and entrepreneurs that will look to satisfy that consumer expectation. But it's also a matter of any of those legacy brands that have been around to recognize that this is an emerging consumer demographic and concern that are looking to purchase products with these ideals in mind, and making sure to recognize that that's an opportunity for improved public health, environmental health, as well as innovations for women.
Well, it's got a way to go, but it's definitely a good direction. I mean, one of the sort of seminal moments in this whole journey was the one where Michelle Obama put herself out as digging the garden and growing good, healthy, organic veg for her family, and it was described as being un-American for doing so. I thought that was it certainly exposed something about the thinking, and hopefully things have got better since then.
Well, they certainly haven't gotten better in terms of political discourse, but I think at the consumer level, they actually have. And this, you know, this piece that Jackie just talked about so well, I mean, consumer education is so critical. But we do also, as an organization, sometimes take this to the courts, and in fact have sued multiple companies over false fraudulent labeling claims, claiming to be natural this or, you know, sustainably produced that, and have at least had some success in forcing companies to remove certain wording from their labels that is misleading to consumers, and also in some cases getting them to commit, whether sincerely or not, to trying to clean up their supply chain to eliminate the contaminants rather than just change their labels. And one of those lawsuits, in fact, involved Roundup, which made claims on its consumer packaging that the ingredients in there didn't affect humans and animals, only plants. And we have successfully forced them to stop making that claim as well.
So you're part of the pressure that's driven the development of this new no glyphosate Roundup, probably. So good on you. Okay, I wonder if you'd just like to summarise now what sort of impact you're hoping for from your report.
I can start with that. I think there are multiple audiences here that we want to have an impact on. We want, obviously, to have an impact on consumers, both in terms of their paying closer attention to marketing claims, to labeling claims, and to how products are sourced, in this case, from factory farms, which, as Jackie pointed out, we think most consumers had no idea that these collagen health food products were coming from factory farms. And we also hope to influence the industry itself, as we talked about, and persuade them to put more pressure at the supply level to segregate at slaughterhouse, at processing plants, so that they can source more responsibly.
Mm-hmm. Could I just ask, have you approached any of the companies whose products you tested to get their response?
I haven't approached any of the companies. I actually did hear from a company the other day that had mentioned that they saw our white paper as an interesting opportunity to innovate and come out with a new product line because they see it as an unfilled market demand. Hopefully we'll see some good coming out of this.
Yeah.
Some brands looking at this as a call to action, that there are consumers that are looking to buy these types of products. You know, it's a matter of, looking at is if consumers set the expectation and buy and vote with their dollars, then I think that we can, reward innovation. So hopefully we'll see some new changes coming out from this study.
Well, that would be great, wouldn't it? That was a good response, really, wasn't it? Maybe they weren't aware of what you found in their products before. I don't know whether they would ever have testing to the level that you've applied to them done before. Is that true?
Well, that's one thing that's interesting, is it's one where... Catherine, you can speak to it too, that it's one where doing heavy metal testing, it isn't expensive. It's like $150 a sample, and so it was something that, it shouldn't take little nonprofits in order to kind of go out there and evaluate these. It's one where it's like routine heavy metal testing is something that's pretty commonplace. The only thing that we try to do is kind of look at heavy metals through the lens of animal welfare, capos, and, use of capos animals in a, collagen natural product. So for us, it's a matter of, it may not be required to do this type of testing
right. From
the court of law, but for, like I had mentioned, the court of public opinion, that's a different story. Consumers have different expectations based on the marketing and the product sector that you're selling your product in. So it's a matter of making sure you actually fulfill and deliver on those consumer expectations.
Right.
He's exactly right about that. We don't know, but we can surmise certainly that many of the people, the health conscious consumers who purchase a collagen product, are possibly never buying meat from factory farms because they know that that's not a healthy product. It's not good for them or good for the environment. So it might be, we assume it was fairly surprising to some of those consumers to find out that while they're avoiding factory farm meat, chicken, et cetera, they're actually daily consuming a health food supplement that did come from a factory farm.
It's true. Yes, you're right. Very health-conscious people might have had no idea at all. And it goes to show how, really, these days, as consumers, we have to become ever more and more savvy if we really want to be sure about what it is we're eating. But on the plus side, the new standards that you're pressurizing for should be an enormous help to everybody with that. So brilliant what you're doing.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Well, look, we'll end it there. Thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us all about your great work to improve the safety of our food.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was a bit of an eye-opener and demonstrates clearly just how difficult it is to buy manufactured foods that really are trustworthy. Another reminder to check out wigwam.org.uk, the new website set up by Yes to Life to underpin a network of support groups for people who are interested in integrative medicine for cancer, as well as to act as a resource centre. Wigwam's running a series of online forums, which are an opportunity for people with cancer to interact directly with experts from integrative medicine online. And they're free. Do take a look. Thanks for listening today. I'll be back next week with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.